Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Our guest today is Andre Chow. Andre is a surgeon, researcher, entrepreneur, co-founder of Touch Surgery and Active COO. The Surgery Simulation app is the world's largest community of surgeons online with over 1.5 million downloads to date. Andre is an incredible leader and today shares his story on how he became such a prolific leader and the lessons he's learned from scaling a bootstrap startup to now having a team of over 100 people. Not bad for an academic with no prior business experience. I was curious to find out how Andre was influenced early on in his career.
So I guess most of my experience with leadership really came from clinical medicine, because obviously that's where I kind of trained and spent most of my years. So, I mean, there have been a couple of, you know, outstanding clinical mentors that I've had, and I've kind of seen how they not necessarily lead teams as such, because obviously team leadership in the NHS is very different than in the company, but kind of how they interact with people and how they treat people to get the best out of them. You know, and I can think of a couple of names that spring to mind, but, you know, it's really, you know, what I take from it most is how you treat people to get the best out of them, and it's not through yelling at them. And I think that's kind of reflected in the way that I try and work with teams currently.
So was that something you were immediately able to transfer into the business setting, or something that took some time?
No, it's definitely not easy, right? I mean, working with people, I think, is the biggest challenge of growing a company. And not letting your frustrations or your emotions get the best of you, I think, is always going to be a challenge when you're leading large teams or large companies. And definitely, you know, when I was starting off in my career, becoming, you know, more senior and so on, you know, having to learn that telling people what to do or shouting at them to get your way wasn't really the right way to go about it. I mean, that took a bit of time, right? I think it's quite natural sometimes for junior leaders to think that to exert authority, they have to act a certain way. But I think in reality, you get the best out of people when you actually don't act in that way.
What aspects of staffing have you found to be the most challenging, whether it be acquiring, retaining, engaging, motivating talent? What's proven to be the toughest from your experiences?
I think, to be honest, every single part of the employee journey has challenges, right? And I can't say that there's one bit that's more difficult than another. It just depends on the day that you catch me, right? Attracting the right talent, making this the sort of place that people will want to come and work at is definitely very challenging, you know. The sort of people that we're trying to attract, you know, smart, creative, driven individuals, are often, they've got the pick of where they want to go and work, right? Most of the engineers that we bring in come in with, I don't know, 10 other job offers already on the table. I mean, it's that sort of market. So the challenge in terms of differentiating why this is the best place to work as opposed to going down the road to Google or Facebook or whatever, that's always a challenge. And then even kind of when people get through the door, you know, remembering that, you know, the first impression someone has of working in your company will last for a lifetime. You know, their first day and their first week. That's been a big learning curve for us, trying to make that kind of onboarding or landing experience as amazing and engaging as possible. I think it's something that actually a lot of people don't pay enough attention to. And, you know, if you ask people, you know, the best companies that they've worked at, and ask them why it was so great, they always will go back to that first experience of how, you know, how they turned up on the first day and how welcome they felt and how everything was just in place. So I think that's often kind of neglected. And then, you know, even kind of more long term, you know, realizing that people aren't robots and, you know, they need room to grow and progress themselves in their career, and allowing space for that and giving people opportunities to do that and seeing that everyone is different. Yeah, that's also a challenge, and something that, you know, requires, I think, a little more long-term planning and longer-term thinking. But if you get it right, I think that's, you know, that's a big advantage.
Now that touch surgery has been around for a while, how do you manage to keep the people who've been there for sort of 1, 2, or 3 years motivated and keep them working hard and towards the collective vision?
Yeah, I think there are a number of things. I mean, obviously, keeping people connected with the mission of the company is incredibly important. I think that's a big reason why a lot of people come and stay here. But kind of in terms of their personal growth, kind of, you know, in a startup, it's hard to give people a career ladder, right? It's not the same as a major corporation where you can have 12 different levels of hierarchy and, you know, after 2 years, you get to go up one rung at a time. You know, there's very little sideways movement or diagonal movement. You can't move to another division of the company and those sorts of things. So you've really got to be aware of learning opportunities for people and areas where they can actually develop more of a specialist interest or deeper area of knowledge. You know, we have a lot of people who've come in as generalists in a particular area and been eventually diverted off to particular specialist areas, you know, which helps them grow as people. But I think unless you're very aware of each individual's kind of desires and how they want to grow themselves, you know, you're going to end up missing that.
So I've been involved with several startups now, and each has had a completely different culture. When you were building Touch Surgery, was there a collective vision for what the culture should be?
Yeah, I guess culture is a hard one. I mean, and defining what makes a good culture is impossible. You know, it's not ping pong tables, it's not free coffee, it's not any of those things. It's the way that people act every single day and the way they treat each other. And there have been many successful companies with incredibly different cultures. So I can't say that there was a particular culture I had in mind when we started the company, but I guess I wanted to make the company something where I would want to work, right? So it's not like I was going for a particular, oh, I must achieve a culture like Google or whatever. But it was, you know, I want to create a culture where, you know, I feel that I would like to come to work and that I can come to work and smile every day and actually enjoy my job and be productive and get a huge amount of satisfaction from it. But, you know, you have to pay attention to it. It's a hard one. I don't think it's something that you can necessarily craft, but, you know, if you don't pay attention to it and you start making, you know, potentially decisions that go against the sort of thing that you would want to work in, you'll end up with a culture that you yourself aren't really comfortable in.
And just briefly going back to the onboarding process, it's such a theme now that companies are taking cultural fits seemingly even more seriously than ever before. Has this been your approach, or has it been more, if they can get the job done, let's get them in?
I think we've realized that actually cultural fit is really important. So, I mean, we have a list of what we call kind of attributes, right, where it's not that everyone has to be the same, but there are certain characteristics of people that we believe will have the best chance of driving the company forward and helping other people be better, right? And, you know, as part of our interview process, we are thinking about these attributes. I have to say we have turned down applicants just because, you know, there were aspects to their way of being that we felt, you know, was actually quite contrary to what we wanted. And so, you know, they may have been great work contributors, but because we didn't believe that they would fit well within the company that we were trying to build, we actually kind of turned them down. So it is something that is important, and we're paying more and more attention to it.
Millennials. It's been such a cliche, but still always compelling topic. Have you noticed any unique challenges associated with that generation?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a difficult one because I can't say that we've been around long enough to have had a whole generation of pre-millennials and then transition into millennials, right? I look around at the moment and I think every single one of our people is pretty much millennial. So I guess it's hard for me to make the comparison. I do think that people in general seem to be less pure salary driven or pure career ladder driven and seem to be more willing to take risks to achieve aspirational goals, if that makes sense, right? So yeah, I think that mainly is the difference, and that's kind of what we try and play towards. And to be honest, that helps startups, you know, because there's no way that we can compare with massive companies in terms of salaries or bonuses or health benefits, all those sorts of things. I mean, you know, we'll get killed if we compete just on that. But where we are able to compete is in terms of, you know, the mission of the company that we're trying to achieve, or, you know, the fact that when people join, their work is impactful and will be seen across the organization because we're small. You know, kind of things like that.
From that, looking at different talent pools, touch surgery is sort of unique in that they've had such a wide variety of talent on their staff. It's got to be hard to have a linear way of motivating them, a singular way of motivating them. So if you consider salespeople who generally are considered to be money motivated versus creatives who are more about how compelling the project is. Has there been different challenges associated with different talent pools?
I think you're right. You know, different types of people have kind of different, you know, needs, and what motivates them differs. But I think, you know, the great thing, I guess, about being here is, to be honest, a lot of people have come here because they want to do something a bit different. And I guess that's a unifying theme that kind of helps to drive everyone. You know, it's we have all of our 3D artists downstairs who could have just gone to work for another film studio and gone up their career ladder, but they've come here because it's something different. The same happens with all of our developers, and, you know, our medical people obviously have jumped ship from a medical career to come here to do something different. So I think everyone kind of here shares that, I guess, quirkiness. I don't know what the right word is, but that sort of mentality where, you know, we're not exactly conforming to the stereotype of our profession. And I think that in itself is a bit of a motivation. You know, they're doing something different because they want to make an impact on the world and on people around the world. So I think, you know, keeping people connected to that mission and that drive is incredibly important.
With that in mind, you're fortunate to have a compelling product that can take wins on staffing for sort of lack of a better term, its quirkiness. However, consider a more traditional sector, for example. How can they use this strategy?
It's hard. I mean, I would argue that even if you're in a more traditional sector, you still have a mission, right? There must still be a mission. It can't just be that I'm in a business because I wanted to run a business, or, you know, I'm in fintech because I wanted to be in fintech. It's, you know, I'm in fintech because I want to make sure that, you know, people everywhere have access to, I don't know, funds when they need it and can buy things for their families. I don't know. There must be a reason. There must be a unifying reason as to why you're doing what you're doing. And if that reason is just to make money, then that's also cool, right? It's like, you know, if I run a bank because, you know, I want to make my customers and ourselves really rich, then great. That's the mission, and people who join should kind of know that. And that will determine its own culture and attract, you know, a certain type of person that will be an exact fit for that, and they'll be very successful, I think. So I kind of think, you know, it does always come down to mission, but that unfortunately is gets harder and harder to permeate through the company as you get bigger.
To wrap things up here, what would be your top three tips regarding staffing and leadership?
What's the top three? I think over communication. I know that sounds weird, but, you know, as you grow, kind of communication between teams or two teams becomes increasingly difficult. And if you're not careful, it leaves people feeling incredibly disconnected from their colleagues and from the company. And even though you think that you're communicating well, you're never communicating as well as you think you are, right? So over communicate to the point where you're thinking that people are bored of what you're saying, because, you know, it really does take that amount of effort to make sure that you stay connected with people, right? So, you know, when I talk to my teams or at family meetings that we have and so on, it's like, you know, I often go over the same topics over and over again. I'll go over our mission over and over again. I'll go over our objectives over and over again every week, because, you know, unless it becomes part of your kind of day-to-day kind of mentality, you don't really live it and you don't really breathe it. So I guess that'd be tip number one. Tip number two, I think, is really actively try and promote diversity in your teams. I don't believe it's just a buzzword. You know, I think having a diverse team from different parts of the world, races, genders, etc., you know, brings so much more to the table. If you end up with an office full of people who are exactly like yourself, you'll all have the same blind spots and the same weaknesses. And, you know, eventually you're going to get killed because of it. And I think ultimately, you know, this is an old saying, but, you know, treat others like you would want to be treated, right? You know, if you're recruiting someone, just imagine if I was applying for a job, how would I like to be treated? It's not nice to be left waiting for a month to hear back from someone, for example. It's really basic stuff. But, you know, if you can put yourself into the shoes of your employees and think about how they, you know, how you would want to be treated in their shoes, it kind of makes things a lot easier.
Great point to finish on. Andre, it's always a pleasure, mate.
Awesome.
And I hope we can do it again soon. Massive thanks to Andre for taking the time to chat with us today. A really insightful look into how he's currently running operations at Touch Surgery. A couple of things that really stood out for me were Andre's take on culture and mission. He stated that ping pong tables and free coffee aren't necessarily the answer to a strong culture. It's about consistency. Consistency of how people interact with each other on a daily basis. That's what builds a culture, and it's the manager's and the leader's responsibility to ensure that this culture isn't disrupted. People need to feel comfortable in their environment at work and feel as though they have a voice, and that voice can be heard from management and leaders. He also put a strong emphasis on mission. He said if the mission is money motivated, then it's absolutely fine. But the most important thing is that the people who work within that organization understand what that mission in fact is. Andre says that one of his big things is over-communication. Bit of a strange one, but one that I absolutely believe in. Over-communication is really important, especially when it comes to things like mission. The whole organization needs to understand what the mission is and what they're working towards. So this idea of over-communication really puts an emphasis on the importance of those things, and seems to work really well for Andre and the team at Touch Surgery. Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.